I would love to welcome to the show Shannon Healy, who is the advisor for Save Promise Club at Jonathan Law High School. And do we also have Aylin Burns here, who's the club president? Do we have Aylin here as well? Let me see.
Here.
Oh, you're both here. Excellent.
Yeah, we're both on the same line.
I'm so glad to have you both here. So excited, especially during this week. Good morning to you both. How are you?
Good. It's been a good week so far.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah,
yes.
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for asking. I know this week is very important to so many. It is National Youth Violence Prevention Week. Tell us, if you don't mind, Shannon, I'm going to start with you because I know Save Promise Club is pretty new to Jonathan Law. It's only been there a year now. Tell us what it is you guys do. What is this club all about?
So Save Promise, it stands for Save is Students Against Violence Everywhere, and it's partnered with Sandy Hook Promise. So our club was founded as its own entity this year by our president, Aylin Burns. It used to be part of another club, but now it's on its own. We're doing our own thing, which is really awesome, and it's all about inclusion, mental health awareness, and making sure our school is a safe and comfortable community for everybody.
So, Shannon, did I hear you correctly? Aylin brought this forward?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So, Aylin, you're now in the hot seat. Why did you want to bring this to Jonathan Law?
Well, I wanted to bring this to Law because it's something I'm really passionate about. And I was getting involved, I think, my sophomore year with Sandy Hook Promise when it was in another club. And I was just so passionate about it and wanted to bring more events to Law. So I wanted to break it off and make our own club so that we could do more because I really am passionate about preventing violence in schools and making sure that students feel included and welcome at every school they're in.
That probably sounds like a very weird question I'm about to ask you, but why? Why do you care so much?
I care so much. I would say probably personal experience because I know like starting in kindergarten, we've done lockdown drills throughout school. And I just remember kindergarten, a lot of people were scared of them. People would cry because they were scared of the dark. And I feel like it just really like angers me that school violence is so normalized now. And every time I see something in the news, it's so heartbreaking because it really can happen to anyone now. And I just really want to like spread awareness and make sure that students feel safe at school because it's something that like they deserve. Students deserve to be able to go to a building and not fear that their life will be taken there.
Amen, sister. I don't disagree with you. Now, I'm curious, and Shannon, maybe you can weigh in on this. Is Jonathan Law, is that the only school in Milford that currently has this club? Are there plans to expand it?
There are plans to expand it, so we're going to try and work with some of the other schools in the district to get more Save Clubs across Milford because it is such an important cause.
So take me to a club meeting. First of all, do you guys meet on like a weekly basis? How does that work?
So we have like a 6-day rotating cycle at Law, and on one of those days we meet during school. So it's about every other week or so, depending on scheduling. And it's really just the kids come in and we'll break down what we're doing for that day, what the plans are, what we want to do. And we have different committees within the club that work on things like advertising or being on social media, fundraising for the club, general activities. And it's really just student-led, like the Violence Prevention Week we've been doing this whole week has been all planned by the students, and it's been really awesome to see them come together and put on such an amazing week for the school.
So Shannon Healy is here as well as Aylin Burns. Shannon is the advisor for Save Promise Club at Jonathan Law High School here in Milford, and Aylin Burns is the club president, also a senior at Law. Aylin, because I know this was something that you were really passionate about, you wanted to bring it to your school. How do you feel it's gone in its first year? Do you feel you've seen any changes? I know that's kind of a tall order, but do you feel like this is becoming a more normalized conversation? Do you feel people speak up? Do you feel they're asking questions or inquiring about what can I do better to protect myself and my peers? What do you think?
I definitely feel like we've had a lot of success this year because we've run many different events. So through Sandy Hook Promise, we started off with one of their weeks called Start with Hello Week. And that week we really focused on inclusion and welcoming all the new students to our school. And I feel like that was really good because we got to see people like saying hi to each other in the hallway a lot more often. And there was just like a much more like positive shift in the school climate. And then towards the middle of the year, we focused on Say Something Week, which is all about how to be an upstander and speaking up for others. And I feel like that was really good because during one of our club meetings, we had a prompt where we asked students what they would change about our school. So I feel like that started to bring up the conversation of what we appreciate, what we don't appreciate, what we would change. So I feel like we've had a lot of important conversations, and I feel like it is really making a difference. All the activities we do, I think, are really meaningful. And even like the simplest ones, I feel like have a big impact on our school.
Yeah. And I've been getting feedback from other staff and students saying, like, this is a really cool thing you're doing. How can we get more involved? How can we make it even bigger? Which has been really awesome to see.
So, Shannon, I'm going to direct this at you, and I do hope that this is taken okay. I want to commend Jonathan Law for embracing this for many reasons. I'm very proud to live in Milford, and that I know at some point my son will be part of the Jonathan Law family, you know, in about 10 years. But also because I know Jonathan Law was in the news, you know, almost 10 years ago. I've become very, very close to Maren Sanchez's mom. I was the first reporter on scene with News 12 when her life was taken. And I know one of the things I talked to Maren's mom about a lot is the importance of transparency and students being able to speak up and share if something doesn't feel comfortable, or being able to say if someone said something they didn't really appreciate, and having value behind those words. Can you speak to us, even in the last decade since what happened to Maren did, you know, how Jonathan Law has really embraced, you know, even clubs like this, and just the importance of students feeling safe and comfortable to speak up about peers or teachers or environmental pressures or social media, whatever it may be?
So I can really only speak to the last 2 years because I'm still relatively new at Law as a staff member. But even in the last 2 years, I've seen a really big change in the ability to say something if you felt necessary. Like Aylin and the club established last year an anonymous reporting system so students and staff could say, like, make a report if they felt necessary, if they felt uncomfortable, so their voice could be heard, and to kind of give that opportunity for students to voice any concerns in a way that they still felt protected through the anonymous system.
Wow. Aylin, how does that work, the anonymous system? Is that something that's easy to incorporate? Because I'm thinking even for workplaces, they may want to adopt something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to incorporate. So basically what we did, we had something already in the works through our power school, I think, mm-hmm. but it was like a really long form and there were lots of questions. So I really wanted to like make it so that if someone had a concern, it was a lot easier to access and there were like less questions. You could really just get your point across really quickly. So we worked on getting that established, and it is. So I think all students have access to it, and it is a really quick, like, couple questions, just like, what's the problem this? And it does say, like, if it is an emergent problem, like, call 911 or something like that, because the anonymous reporting system is not for, like, super emergent things. Like, it's for concerns that can maybe be looked at, like, the next day or something like that. So I feel like that was really important to get established.
What would you say? I know, Aylin, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it, you're a senior, so you are moving on to your next chapter. What would be your goals for this club after you leave? What do you hope to see happen? You know, even after you're gone, it seems like you've got a great foundation here. You've got an amazing advisor. I could tell Shannon is very passionate about it. Like, you've got a great team. You've got a lot of students. I have one of your club members who's working with me now. I adore Katie. I could tell right away that she's got something different. And so I'm not shocked that she'd be part of this. But what are your hopes? What are your goals for this club?
I feel like my biggest goal for the club is just that it will stay active after I graduate, which I'm very positive that it will. I feel like that was like the biggest thing that I worked on this year, because after I split the club and made Save its own thing, I did that because I really wanted it to stay after I graduate, because I think that it's so important to have. So I feel like this year we've been training some of the underclassmen to be officers in the future. And we've done lots of activities and given ideas. So I feel like we've just started a really strong base for the club to just grow. So I really hope that they continue to grow and keep the community involved and just, I don't know, do as much as they can.
Just out of curiosity, Aylin, are you going to college next year? It's okay if you're not. I just wanted to know.
Yes, I am going to college next year. I'm going to Rice University in Houston, Texas.
Wow. Do you think you'll maybe pitch having something like this, creating a club on your college campus?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the goals I have. I do want to focus on building a club, or at least just bringing the programs there, because I think they are so important. And I know that Sandy Hook Promise has a lot in elementary, middle, and high school, not so much in college, but that's something there is work they are working on. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I definitely want to help bringing that transition so there's more clubs and practices in college too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Nicole Hockley I've talked to so many times, and she has said that she wants to expand the program to getting outside of the K through 12 and expanding it to colleges as well. So good luck. I think that would be amazing. I'm going to challenge Katie to do the same thing when she goes to UConn. So don't worry, I'm not putting just the pressure on you, but I think this is amazing. I thank you for caring, both of you. I thank you for caring and wanting to expand this, make this normal. It starts at Jonathan Law High School here in Milford. So thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate your time. Again, Shannon Healy, the advisor for Save Promise Club at Jonathan Law High School, as well as Aylin Burns, who is the club president. And I did want to let you know that you can learn more about this, again, through Sandy Hook Promise, which they're the ones who launched this idea and have created partnerships. And that's where this club, you know, stems from. So if you want to learn more, you can go to sandyhookpromise.org, or you can always give the folks over at Jonathan Law a call if you want to learn more and hear about their model and what's working for them. If you want to put that into place for your school or your district, I think it sounds amazing.
Now, for a look at your news beyond Bridgeport, Melissa in the Morning takes you around the region on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
If a child is, say, too young to sign a contract or too young to open a bank account, in the real world, they're too young to sign terms of service agreement and use social media.
I don't think it's a coincidence that the four of us are all raising young children.
Enough is enough. The data speaks for itself.
The way to get kids to linger on the platforms and to maximize profit is to upset them.
I don't know if you recognized one of those four voices in that whole compilation of senators, but one of them is our very own Chris Murphy here from Connecticut, and he co-authored a bill. It's a bipartisan group of senators introducing a piece of legislation aiming to protect kids from any harmful effects that are posed by using social media. This would be the biggest piece of legislation to ever hit our nation in regards to social media if it passes. The biggest concern people have is we've never seen the tech companies crumble. They have so many attorneys representing them. They have so many lobbyists, people who are going to stop them from protecting their number one clientele, young people, preteens and teenagers. And that's why these group of senators, both Republican and Democrat, came together and said, enough is enough. We cannot have this go on in our country. You know, we've had a lot of reports on this, and actually May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we're going to do an awful lot on that subject in the next few weeks on the show. But we know, even since the pandemic, that we are having a huge problem here in our country with mental health. We know that teens and young adults and even preteens really struggled with isolation, much like you and I did as adults. But we're seeing a huge uptick in anxiety and depression and body image issues and even suicide, attempted suicides, thoughts of self-harm and other things that no parent or any adult would want to hear children going through. But that's the reality we're seeing here in America. And unfortunately, we've seen partnered with that the abuse that children are facing when they get onto social media. Some can handle it better than others. There are some who make sure that their platforms are tailored to only positive things. There are some children who have parents who check their social media platforms. But there are others who don't. And unfortunately, you have even 11, 12, 13-year-olds who are streaming on YouTube. We talked about this a few months ago. Do you remember the Bridgeport preteen who died after watching those creepy videos of the blue character with the sharp teeth? Remember we talked about that? And it came off of a video game series and was then created into these really dark, manipulating videos for young children. And a Bridgeport child actually took his own life after watching those videos endlessly. And the family didn't even know that he was watching them. Now, that is still under investigation. But the big thing that lawmakers are looking at, again, from both sides of the aisle, is enough is enough. You are making way too much money, tech companies, on our children who are being exposed, who are being, used to look at content, and it's impacting their mental health. It's impacting the way that they even have a grasp of reality, of what is real and what's not, and what's being manipulated. You know, we talk also a lot about the challenges you'll hear, like on TikTok, and how they seem like lunacy to you and me, right? We hear about them and we think, well, this can't be, no child would believe this, but they do. And they're going through with them. And that's why the senators came together and they said, we have to do something. So, as I mentioned, our very own Chris Murphy is one of the co-authors, along with U.S. Senators Brian Schatz of Hawaii, Democrat of Hawaii, Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, and Katie Britt, Republican of Alabama. They introduced the Protecting Kids on Social Media Act. The senators yesterday had presented this, and they cited a recent report from the CDC. It shows mental health issues are on the rise among America's youth, finding 2/3 of high school girls and 1/3 of high school boys feel persistently sad or hopeless. Lawmakers say they didn't shop the bill to the social media companies before introducing it because they expect a massive uphill battle. They know a fight is ahead. The tech industry is going to come at this bill and every other kids' online safety bill with everything it's got. This is coming from Senator Schatz yesterday. He says they're going to come up with individual use cases and scenarios to try to poke holes in this. But the burden of proof is on those who want to protect the status quo, because the status quo is making a whole generation of users mentally ill. You want to know the big thing, though, about all of this? So, again, if this were to pass, it would be the biggest piece of social media legislation to pass in our country in today's history, in all of history. Again, the Protecting Kids on Social Media Act. It would set a minimum age of 13 to use social media apps like Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And it would require parental consent for users 13 to 17 years old. So it would mean kids would have to go to their parents and say, hey, can I be on TikTok? Parents would sign off on it, and then there you go. You're off and going. The bill would ban social media companies from recommending content using algorithms for users under the age of 18. It would also require the companies to employ age verification measures and instruct them to create a pilot project for a government-provided age verification system that platforms could use. Again, let me go back to where I find the concern here. I have no problem, honestly. As a parent, knowing I'm raising this next generation, my almost five-year-old, who is for sure going to be exposed to cell phones and social media, probably by the time he enters kindergarten, which is just a mere few months away. And that alone is terrifying. It's something I never had to grow up with, nor did you, probably, because there was no social media. Not until I got to college. But here we are in a brand new era where everyone is exposed to it. This is the norm. And here's the thing, is you can have lawmakers pass any bills you want. And I'm not saying I'm against it. But here's the thing to think about. We're, again, in some ways, enabling parents of doing their jobs. Why aren't parents already checking their kids' phones? Why aren't parents, if they're the ones paying for the phones, why aren't they the ones saying, hey, can I just see what apps you have on your phone? Why are 10 and 11 and 12-year-olds making those kinds of decisions without the consent already from their parents? Not to say that we shouldn't have a law requiring it. I'm not saying that parents aren't busy. We know that this is the generation of working moms and people trying to juggle multiple jobs. We get it. We get that we're trying to do more than even previous generations ever had to do balancing the two. But at the end of the day, if you decided to bring kids into this world and you're paying for their things, to what extent do you get the right to just say, hey, I pay for that phone. You want to pay for your phone? Then I don't have to check it. But if I'm paying for it, I want to see what's on it. Why is that so taboo? And I'm sure I'm kind of dating myself a little bit, but this was a standard growing up. When I was growing up, there was AIM, Instant Messenger. Every Friday, my mother would come over and check mine and my brother's Instant Messenger, our friend list. Who are you talking to? Do I recognize that person? If we couldn't say within a 5-second period or something who that person was that matched the name, my mom deleted them. No complaints. Sorry. They're off. Done. Because guess what? Mom and dad pay for this computer. And we need to know who you're talking to. And this was during a time my mom was a registered nurse, so she was very nervous that we would be poached by people online. you know, because this was around the time that people were just starting to get out of MySpace. Facebook was sort of in the works a little bit, but we didn't know about it. Online dating sort of became a thing, and parents were scared about their kids being targeted by older adults. And so they were terrified of these chat rooms. But this was a standard in our house. Did I like it? No, I can remember hating it. But do I think my parents were good at, in that aspect of checking those things in the moment? No. As a 32-year-old now, yes, absolutely. Because they were on it. And there was no getting by. Or if we did, it was a very narrow, narrow alleyway to do so. I was just telling you folks a couple minutes ago about this new bipartisan bill. It was put forward by four senators, including our very own Senator Chris Murphy. It would block kids under the age of 13 from joining social media and also require teenagers, so that's 13 to 17, Katie falls in that category, to obtain parental consent in order to join sites like TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. And so, as I mentioned, Katie is a senior. She goes to one of the high schools here in Milford. She is our new news intern for the rest of her semester, which, side note, is a very cool thing that they do here in Milford. I can't wait for Chase to go through this in 15 years. But I wanted to know from you, Katie, you're 17. How would you feel if this legislation was in place, whether that was when you were 13 or even now as a 17-year-old, if you had to go and let's say this passed tomorrow, it's not going to, but let's say it did, how would you feel about needing to get your parents' approval? They need to give their consent for you to be on any social media platforms. What do you think?
I love the idea. I think it's something that we've needed for years. Personally, I started with social media really, really young.
Right. How young?
I was like maybe 10 years old.
Really? When you say you started young, like, what do you mean? What were you doing?
The first thing I did, I had an Instagram account. That was the first thing I ever had.
Really?
And it was right when I hit middle school, I think, because all my friends had it. So I was like, well, I want to have an account. You know, I have to follow all my friends and see what they're doing. And then I just kept going as I got older.
Mm-hmm. So you've been exposed to social media, dare I say, only 3 years shorter than I have. Like, you've been on social media, you know, almost half your life, which is pretty unbelievable. And so the majority of your life will be exposed to that. So how do you feel, you know, from your friends' point of view, like, you know, seeing how your friends are with social media, do you find that they're impacted by the content that's on there, whether it's body image or...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things you guys talk about in high school?
There's so much on social media where it's like, we get a lot of things pushed to us. It's a lot of like fitness influenced lifestyle content, and that's always getting pushed. Like, all of my friends and I, even I received it, and it's a bunch of stuff about people with some overly romanticized versions of their lives, or it's a lot of people who do content creation professionally.
Mm-hmm.
So they obviously know how to draw in all the views, and that's usually what we get sucked into. And coming from a teenager, and my perspective on it, seeing that all the time has really affected my mental health, especially as I've gotten older and being exposed to it at such a young age. It kind of gives me at sometimes a sense of like less self-worth than I should have, because I'm not doing what these people are doing, or I'm not accomplishing as much as I wanted to, or I should be at my age.
You know, and the people who are listening right now, you don't know Katie. I've gotten to know Katie since her application process, which started over a month ago. Katie won't tell you this because she's a very humble person, and I did not know her before she applied for this position. She's very active in her school. She's in a bunch of clubs. She is, you know, she does news for her school. She's a competitive dancer after school. She hasn't told me her grades, but I could tell you're a good student because this girl's like sitting here literally working on papers and in the commercial breaks. It's unbelievable. And she's very connected to the community. Like, you have a great head on your shoulders, Katie. What I'm getting at is you're a very well-rounded person. You know, you're a smart girl. You've got a lot going for you. And so we're not just talking to like any random, because you'll get people who think like, oh, okay, well, any teenager will say that. No, here's somebody who is well-educated. She has a great head on her shoulders. She's headed to college in the fall. Great program, everything. But still, social media has impacted your mental health. It's mm-hmm. impacted your what you think is almost like reality versus what I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's telling, very telling.
Yeah, it's definitely been difficult because once you hit high school, it's like a whole other level, especially with people using it so young and having really young kids. Like, I teach in my dance studio,
mm-hmm.
and the girls that I teach, I've taught them since they were like 5 or 6 years old. They're now in middle school. They're like 11, 12 now. And everything is social media about. It's like, who's this person said this about me, or this person is talking about this. And I'm like, guys, why are we doing this?
Mm.
I think that having the age restrictions and having the parents involved will definitely help with a lot of the issues that a lot of kids face while using social media and all the arguments or the cyberbullying, and it would help eliminate some of that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really great perspective. And honestly, this is the first, to me, concrete situation, because even my own sisters are in their mid-20s. So I'm not even really in touch with like your generation, if you will, and understanding like 10 years old to be on Instagram. Like, mm-hmm. I'm still in the realm of, when do I even give my kid a cell phone? So like, what's the average age people are getting cell phones? Like, when did you guys get cell phones?
So my mom, I really loved what she did. She gave my sister and I cell phones once we started middle school, only because we were taking the bus home by ourselves. And we had to let ourselves in our house all on our own.
Okay.
So that's the only reason why we had them. So it's like she put on like location sharing. So she would make sure we got home on time.
So she tracked you guys.
Yeah. Yep. Which I thought was a great idea and I loved it. And she still does it to this day and mm-hmm. it's totally fine by me. But also when I was really young, because she knew she was giving me a phone so young, she told me, she's like, I'm going to be checking your text messages. I'm going to be checking
your
emails.
Mom.
Yeah, she did a great job with it and definitely helped prevent some situations that I could have stumbled upon, mm-hmm. but I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my biggest fear is this is totally uncharted territory, mm-hmm. I think, for parents of my age, because we did not grow up with them. I got my first cell phone when I was like a junior in high school because we had like the big car phone cell phones
yeah.
when I was in middle school. That's when they came out with those cell phones. So like the flip phones, if you will, like the Razor came out. I don't even know if you know what the Razor is, but
yeah.
that came out when I was in college. Like, this is very uncharted territory for a lot of adults who are raising kids today. So great perspective, Katie. And good job being on the show for the first time.
Thank you.
Can't wait to have you back on soon. That's our intern, Katie. I'm really impressed with her and I love that she's here. By the way, she comes in at 5:45 every morning. I know, 17 years old. Can you believe it? Lots and lots of people like to eat the French fries. How many, would you say? Well, the last time they did a study on this, at least the last one I can find, was in August of 2021. But I'd say we're probably about around this amount. You ready for this? According to Grit, Americans eat a total of 4.5 billion pounds of French fries a year. We like French fries. I told you that. Here's the thing, though. There was a new study that came out earlier this week that is very concerning. French fries potentially having a link to negative impacts on our mental health, including depression. So we're welcoming back to the show Dr. Andrew Wong, someone you know and love from Hartford Healthcare. And we want to talk a little bit more about the connection here and whether or not this goes for any other fast food, or is it just this greasy item that we're seeing these horrible results? So, Dr. Wong, glad to have you here. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Melissa. I'm doing great. I kind of miss the old days when all we had to worry about was MSG in our food.
Now yeah, right?
It's fried foods.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, first of all, Dr. Wong, are you surprised by this? Not the fact that French fries are getting a bad rap, because I think, like you said, we all know fast food has negative health impacts on us, like physical health and in our bodies and clogged arteries and things like that. But mental health, like, this is interesting to me.
Yeah, that is very interesting. So we know that fried foods can cause hypertension. It can cause heart disease, obviously obesity. There's some evidence that shows fried foods are linked to dementia and memory loss. They can make us immunocompromised. And we're talking about eating fried foods more than twice a week. So keep that in mind. Once a week is okay as a treat, even twice a week. But if we do more than that, there are some real health repercussions. So this study showed that, and it's a very good study. It was published in the National Academy of Science. And they followed 140,000 people over an 11-year period. And what they found was that people who ate more fried foods, particularly French fries, fried potatoes, they had a 10% higher incidence of depression, as well as a 10% higher incidence of anxiety. And this was more pronounced in younger people, as well as younger men.
So specifically, again, I just want to clarify, we're talking French fries, or are we talking fried food in general?
Fried food in general, but there was a higher correlation of anxiety and depression. So about 8% with fried food in general, but 10 to 12% for people who preferred French fries, fried potatoes. And the theory was that the depression and anxiety, and this part isn't clear, this was the author's suggestion, is that it's due to a chemical called, get this, acrylamide. So when I think about acrylamide, I think about plastic nails and paint.
I was just going to say, it sounds like acrylics, like when I go to the nail
acrylics,
salon.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. So, gosh,
yikes.
Yeah, there's a chemical called acrylamide that particularly gets released by potatoes when they're exposed to high heat. So unfortunately, not just frying, but also even baking.
Oh, wow.
Potatoes release a chemical called acrylamide that when we study it in animals, so they quote a study in zebrafish, a fish species, and they gave the fish acrylamide. They found interesting behavioral changes. So zebrafish are schooling fish, and the fish that ate acrylamide just refused to swim in schools. Also, the fish preferred to stay in darker part of the tanks, so they would gather in the back of the tank, away from the light. And so the schooling behavior is very similar to depression.
I was just going to say, signs of depression. Yeah.
100%. And the avoidance is really a sign of anxiety. So they kind of felt that the acrylamide in the fried French fries was a major cause of those symptoms. There's a big cause and effect, though. We know that if we're depressed or anxious, our bodies tend to look for comfort. And for many of us, that's what we call high-calorie foods. That would be fried foods, that would be alcohol, sugary carbohydrates. Sometimes our bodies just steer us to those high-calorie foods when we do feel upset.
Dr. Andrew Wong, what I found also concerning, you said earlier that this study found the link was more pronounced in young men and young consumers. The younger consumers, that's what scares me, because I think we are living with a generation that are very picky eaters. I don't know if it's gotten worse. I don't know if it's because foods are very different than they were like for us 30 years ago, but I can't find a parent who doesn't have a picky eater. I thought it was just us. We struggle tremendously with our son and his eating habits, and we work very hard on it. And I have not met another parent that has had an easy road with their kids around Chase's age. And so I don't know if that's showing how much our food has changed in the last few decades. But my bigger concern here is that, thank God, knock on wood, my son has no interest in French fries. He does not like them, thank God. But a lot of his friends do. I know parents who their kids are having French fries 3-4 times a week at minimum on average. So what does that mean? I mean, this is really concerning.
Yes, it is. I think that the downstream effects we have yet to see. Unfortunately, I think the Wong family is more kind of in that latter category where it's convenient. Dads are busy, moms are busy, and sometimes the last thing you want to do is have a fight with the kids. And so you reach for what they like because you want your kids to be happy. You want the family to be happy. So nowadays, you just kind of go down the street and you see all these options. You see fast food everywhere. French fries, especially. Mm-hmm. There's a big kick now towards those fried chicken sandwiches. It seems like every fast food restaurant has a competition to see who can make the best fried chicken sandwich. There's real downstream effects. So instead of avoiding it completely, I think understanding that having a balanced diet, mixing in some greens, because that's part of it too, that if we just eat fried foods, primarily, we're not getting the vitamins that we need because the fried foods really have no vitamins. They're just full of calories and fat. But we need folate, we need vitamin B12, we need vitamin D, we need magnesium. And we know for sure that lack of those nutrients can cause insomnia, anxiety, it can cause muscle pains, chronic fatigue. So, you know, do it in steps. So maybe limit yourself to 2 times a week or 3 times a week. Go down a little bit and start supplementing other foods. And eventually the kids will catch on and they'll start liking new things.
Well, Dr. Wong, I appreciate you coming on and addressing this study with us, and certainly things that, you know, that parents and grandparents should be aware of with raising kids right now. Pretty disturbing to see that kind of a link, but glad to know it now than to find out later and wonder what could have caused this or what could I have done better to prevent this in my children. So I appreciate you, Dr. Andrew Wong. Thanks for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. Have a good day, Melissa.
Thank you. You too. Dr. Wong here on WICC.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
We know there was one very special person who was wild about the zoo and wildlife and nature in general. And now there's been a new building named after her. Kathy Brady Education Center set to officially open up at the Beardsley Zoo, a dedication ceremony coming up this weekend. And Greg Dancho is here to talk more about this and what we can expect. Good morning to you, Greg. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, it's this is exciting to us because, you know, there are people out there that really, really put their heart and soul into loving wildlife and mm-hmm. loving animals. And Kathy Brady is one of those people.
Tell me about Kathy for people who don't know.
Kathy actually grew up in New York. We lived in New York. She was a photographer. She loved photographing wildlife. And her pictures were shown all over, you know, in galleries around the New York area. And actually nationally. And she would come to the zoo with her friend Neil Carnegie, who came to the zoo, and they'd sit basically and take photographs and just watch the wolves. She really enjoyed the wolves the most. So they would sit at the zoo. Now these are one of those things that they came quite often, but just basically on their own. We didn't really know her personally.
Yeah,
somebody that would talk to us.
I wonder why, though. Like, why did she come up?
Because
they've got zoos.
They came to be with the animals and just kind of commune with them. And that's wonderful. That is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
That's
so
beautiful.
Unfortunately, she did pass away in 2022. Neil came to us and said he'd love to be able to do something for the zoo in her memory.
Wow.
And we did talk with him and, again, got more information. And we looked at what we did call the research station here at the zoo. That is a building that years and years ago, the greenhouse had a garage in the back.
Okay.
It was a garage.
Okay.
And when the zoo took over the operation of the greenhouse along with its own operation, that garage, we always looked at that and said, it's got to be something more than a garage.
Mm-hmm.
And we changed it over to an on-grounds education building because we didn't have a classroom setting anywhere on the zoo grounds. And
oh,
so what we did was, working with the GE Elephant Society, we were able to modify that up and redo the building into an educational facility. But again, over time, that's what it's been. It's been a classroom, and people can go in there on the weekends, and we have some animals in there and some crafts. But with the Kathy Brady Wolf Eyes Charitable Gift Fund, which is the group that put the money together, we have now rebranded this center now into a place where it can educate, enrich, and excite explorers of all ages. My staff came up with that. I didn't come up with that. There's perfect words for it, though.
I think that's great. That's really cool.
Not only inside the building, but outside, we've created a pathway to the building that we use now, we'll be using this summer for our Monarch Watch program. So we have an actual setting now. Instead of on the lawn, we have a place where our person that Jennifer, that the person that does our butterfly tagging program has a place now to set up for our guests. Pergola now. So when we have our summer camp kids come in, our zoo patrol kids come in, the parents can sit underneath the shade area. The building has been painted over, and we have a new roof on it. Inside, we have a big TV, computer TV inside there now that we could do citizen science. So our students and people in there can actually have meetings with people in the field. So just a total redo of taking this building and repurposing it, not repurposing, but rebranding it into something that moves our mission forward. We're going to be working also with the SAFE program in there. We're going to be focusing on SAFE. SAFE is saving animals from extinction. We have many animals here that are part of that program with AZA. So that also will be part of this program. And to top it all off, we have a brand new bronze statue of a wolf that's dedicated to Kathy over by our wolf woods, where they used to, where she used to go over to and watch the wolves. So there's a big bronze statue there now in her honor. So people can sit there and I love bronzes because they're very tactile.
Mm,
people love to touch them and take pictures with it. So again, we're really, really excited about this, and we really appreciate Neil coming to us and the family and the Kathy Brady Wolf Eyes Charitable Gift Fund for making this happen. I think it's going to be a real exciting time for us to, again, move a program even more forward into the future.
And I feel bad saying this, Greg, because you know how much I love the zoo. I didn't even know you had an education center that was open to the public on property.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
That's
well,
news
this
to
building
me.
Will be open on a daily basis. We do have some animals inside. We have some reptiles and we have some insects. We have our hellbenders in there. We do our trout in the classroom program in there. And then we do our zoo patrol program in there. So people
are
looking
so cool
to be kids for a zoo patrol. Again, look on our website for that. I think we're doing signups now. But that building becomes a hub of education for us. That's why I'm so excited about that. This now has Kathy Brady's name attached to it, because that's, again, something that embodes, the love for wildlife and love for education and love for that kind of thing. So it's really, really kind of cool. I'm really excited.
And Greg Dantrow of the Beardsley Zoo's here. The thing I was kind of insinuating before, Greg, that I think is really interesting is like you were saying, you just never know who is touched by the work that you're doing. Like, here's a woman who was coming from New York, and they have zoos there. They have amazing zoos there. You've talked
right
about them before.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she still made it a point to regularly come up to Bridgeport and see the animals we had on property. What does that say about the Beardsley Zoo?
Well, I think, again, we are, and all zoos have that that ambiance to it. So you could go to the Bronx Zoo again, Central Park and all the other facilities that are wonderful, wonderful facilities. I say that our place is a very intimate facility, that we are small enough to take it in one gulp, but we're also intimate enough and friendly enough, and the animals are close enough to where you can really make that connection. And that's something that I find very important, is the making the connection with wildlife, and whether it's with the wolves, the tigers, the leopards, the baby otters that will be coming out hopefully shortly. I just wanted to mention that the baby otters are doing very, very well. And again, I'm sure that they're going to be very popular summer. In about another week or so, they're going to have their first vet visit. And really, about 8 weeks, I'm expecting them to start thinking about moving out of there. So we're going to about two or three more weeks before I think mom's going to have them outside. So everybody stay tuned, because that's going to be something we'll definitely promote when they start coming out with mom. And I just want to mention one thing before we go. Again, you always get the scoop there, Melissa. I want to give you the scoop again.
I do.
we're really excited to announce that we have the first birth of a golden lion tamarin at the zoo since 2007. The golden lion tamarins are the golden monkeys in the building, the small monkeys in the building. We do have a baby born. The mother, Leo, is Leo and Cricket are taking care of the baby right now. And so we're really excited to announce that. This is a conservation success story in zoos, that most of all the animals that are in the wild right now come from zoos, because they were basically extinct in the wild. And we've had GLTs here at the zoo that have been born many years ago that have been released back to wild. But since 2007, we have not had a successful birth. And now we do have a little baby to announce that is being carried by mom and dad in the rainforest. So if you, they may be out again, just like we've said before, we give them their space. And so if mom wants to be on display with baby, that's fine. If she doesn't want to be, then that's fine also. So,
wait, again, when was the baby born, Greg? I wasn't told about this.
A couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Thanks for letting me know. No, I'm just kidding. This is so exciting. You're getting the first.
Wow. Yeah, and again, this is her first successful birth. So
right.
we're really holding our breath to
being
make sure
careful.
That she was. And
I
again, being cautious and being quiet, she had a tendency of being very nervous. So we wanted to make sure that she's given everything that she needed to take care of this little offspring. So we're real excited. We have no idea. They're very, very cute. We'll make sure that you get a picture or a video of that'll be also on the website. We'll put a video up on the website and our Facebook page, and we'll send you one. But about as cute as animal as you can ever see. And again, it's been since 2007 since we've had a long-term birth. So we're really, really excited about this.
It is really exciting. And I also want to just remind folks that for the new rededication for the Education Center, the Kathy Brady Education Center, there's going to be an official ribbon-cutting ceremony 11:30 this Saturday, and that's going to be open to the public after that, and a lot of great opportunities being, reintroduced and expanded at this Education Center at the Beardsley Zoo. So, Greg, thank you. So much news. I didn't even know I was going to get the second half of that, so very exciting.
Yeah, see,
thank you.
See, you never know, Melissa. You never know.
Oh, Greg, you always have tricks up your sleeve. I know that about you. My father learned that about you at the golf tournament when you took out a snake in the middle of whatever hole you were on. I was like, you never can sell Greg Dantro short. He's always got something up his sleeve, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, have a great weekend, guys.
Thanks, Greg. We appreciate
you. Take care.
Greg Dantro of the Beardsley Zoo here on WICC, and a brand new baby on campus at the Beardsley Zoo. How exciting for the Gold Lion Tamarins. And as you heard from Greg, this is the first time they've had offspring since 2007 on property. That was a successful birth, so very excited for that conservation story, and we'll learn more as soon as we get it.